The priority was showing unity. Labor has wrapped up its three-day national conference with little disagreement on show. What did it all achieve? And will the government now change course on anything? The Prime Minister is our guest this morning. I'm David Spears. Welcome to Insiders. Labor Party conferences aren't what they used to be. This was a tightly controlled affair over 3 days in Adelaide. Difficult debates, carefully managed behind the scenes to avoid any public fireworks. On the final day, the factions closed ranks to block backbencher Ed Husic, who wanted the party to recognise claims of Israeli genocide in Gaza. There was one genuine debate on the conference floor over whether telehealth should be used for voluntary assisted dying. We'll hear where the Prime Minister stands on that shortly. But the main outcome for Anthony Albanese was an overwhelming demonstration of agreement and party discipline.
Welcome to Adelaide and the 50th National Conference of the Australian Labor Party.
The rock star welcome to Labor's love fest.
Anthony Albanese didn't come empty-handed.
In a win for unions, a new fair work court to be created.
And more money for students doing work placements in health.
This is real help with the cost of living for tens of thousands of Australians.
While I'm out talking to these people, the Labor Party is talking to itself.
With one eye on Australian households and the other on One Nation.
One Nation.
One Nation.
One Nation.
One Nation.
One Nation.
The Liberals, Nationals and One Nation are already a coalition.
The conference is over.
Fantastic. No, that's not our conference, it's the other side.
Debates have been largely settled behind closed doors.
Even a much-anticipated argument on gambling was resolved at the last minute.
So has it been too stage-managed then? Has it been too neat?
This whole thing of being allergic to dissent, dispute, I don't think that actually works in our long-term interest.
For all the displays of unity and resolve, there were fault lines.
The union-led push for an explicit commitment to a gas tax failed.
Delegates backed a conscience vote on changing federal laws relating to voluntary assisted dying.
These laws hinder care and cause unnecessary delays.
Removing federal safeguards in this area could facilitate heightened elder abuse.
Labor's caucus debates AUKUS.
Labor MP Ed Husic speaking out against his own party's decision to block a motion
that would declare Israel's destruction of Gaza a genocide.
The Netanyahu government basically knows it can weather the statements.
Stop killing kids. Wait, everyone gets that.
They can put me in the freezer, I don't give a shit.
You're in a cuddle.
Thank you. I needed that.
This is the most purposeful and united national conference I have attended since I joined the Labor Party. Well done.
And on the couch with us this week, Raph Epstein from ABC Radio Melbourne, Network 10 political editor Ashley Raper, and chief political reporter for the Australian newspaper Greg Brown. Very good morning to all of you. Raph, you were the only one here who wasn't at the conference covering
out
the minutiae of the platform debates. I'm keen to hear what you think about, from an outsider's perspective, what did it all achieve?
I think it's a good chance to, or a good way to portray your wares, to show off. You get lots of coverage. People out there in Voterland have some sense of what they were doing. I think people also know that issues that get a lot of traction, gas tax, things like that, weren't maybe ventilated and talked about. I don't know if the party feels like it was a success. I know you want to get stuck into whether or not there's enough dissent. The one thing I did get from chatting to lots of people who are in Adelaide, and this sort of combination of my words and their words, Labor's the party that gets shit done. All the other mobs, they're a shit show.
Right.
So, and so there were variations of that from people. So One Nation, the coalition, they're a mess. Sure, we don't have the dissent we used to have, but we get stuff done.
I mean,
and they're hoping that message gets out there.
Colourfully put, but that is exactly what the aim was for Labor, right? To show we're united, disciplined, a sensible party of government. The rest of them are all over the shop. But at what cost, Ash?
well, this is it. It was this whole thing about, you know, disunity breeds disillusionment. We don't want to show that. But, you know, you go to these conferences and you talk to the MPs and Labor Party members, they get misty-eyed about conference. We go, we thrash ideas out, we have a debate. Let's be honest, that did not happen here. So they just need to get real and say, OK, that's not what we do anymore. Yes, we pretend that's what we do, but no, we have orderly processes, we put in place these processes, it's all done behind closed doors.
Yeah, there's still policy debates going on, yes. Just not in public.
Yes, and there's differing views on how successful that is, whether, you know, who actually gets into those rooms to have those fights, which is different to having it as a free-for-all on the floor.
So why the change, Greg? I mean, is this because Labor's still scarred from the Rudd-Gillard divisions? Is it the social media age that we're in now where they're fearful of, you know, a moment being clipped up and being viral and living in eternity to come back and bite them?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. I think the scarring from the Rudd-Gillard era can't be underestimated. And I have sympathy for part of what Ed Husic said when he talked about how the lessons of the Rudd-Gillard era are we can never have debates. It's almost like become we can never have public debates. When I think if you actually look at the issues, they were far more about sort of leadership and people leaking against each other in very damaging ways. So it's certainly to Anthony Albanese's advantage that things are this tight.
Absolutely.
He very much says that it's only the media that cares that we're not having debates on the floor of National Conference and in caucus and all this. But I can't help but think that when it just looks like an authoritarian regime, then voters, I think, without seeing that exchange of ideas, I think it can turn people off.
I'm not sure it's an authoritarian regime.
A bit much. But
I think what has changed, though, it used to be if you were a dissenter, you were in the mainstream. Now, if you are a dissenter, you are an outlier. I just wanted to read a quote. Someone who was at Labor conference in 2015 who opposed the leader, who was opposed to boat turnbacks. His name is Anthony Albanese. And this is how much dissent was in the mainstream. He was on Insiders the Sunday after the 2015 ALP conference. This is what he said. When you're prepared to actually have a debate about ideas and bring it to a conclusion, what you end up with is a better outcome than when you have a couple of people sit in a room and make decisions on behalf of the whole movement. So it used to be a mainstream thing to dissent. It isn't anymore. I actually spoke to quite a few people who said, oh, no, we're pretty bruised by the conversations we're having. So I think it is true there are debates, well, but it's definitely changed.
People say, oh, no, look, you know, we're still having all the debates. They're just in different forums. They're just not in the media. But often you'll speak to backbenchers and they won't know directions of government policy.
Yeah, well, let's talk about policy because, yes, wherever these debates are happening, you know, in closed rooms or on the floor of the conference, what did we learn, Ash, about where the Labor Party, the Labor movement want to go, their direction? I mean, there weren't a lot of debates around getting productivity and economic growth going.
No, it was what almost devoid of that economic chat. You know, there were some things that went in and whether it is those controversial issues that we expected, you know, but there was stuff around the AI, you know, there was the gambling, the gas tax, those were the things that we were watching. And there were movement on some things, you know, the AI in terms of Tony Sheldon, the senator, he got something up in terms of getting a working group around that involved unions and Labor representatives on that. And with gambling as well, there was this push to have a national regulator which goes further than the government's legislation that is currently before the parliament. Now, that was a push from the left. It didn't quite happen. They got a bit more around regulation. So what we saw a lot of the time was they gave a little bit, just enough, but it didn't go actually further or push the government much further than their policies at the moment.
But just quickly, whether it's AI or the announcement of a new Fair Work Court, is it fair to say the unions would be particularly happy with the direction that we saw on show coming out of this conference?
Yeah, I think they would. And I think to see the debates of what happened in the lead-up to National Conference, you only have to look at the difference between the preliminary draft that was leaked out in March and the final draft. And that's where you had extensive additions to AI and the platform. You had major changes to the Israel-Palestine section, which, of course, very controversially deleted that clause about the parties supporting or urging Hamas to disarm and have no place in the state of Palestine. And then if you look at government policy in the lead up to conference as well, the gambling reforms were announced a few months out, and obviously all the tax reform in the budget that is now locked into the platform, that certainly helped win over delegates because that package was very popular.
All right, well, time to hear from the Prime Minister. I spoke to Anthony Albanese as the conference was wrapping up in Adelaide yesterday. Prime Minister, thanks for joining us at the end of this Labor conference.
Good morning.
So, a young Anthony Albanese once came along to these conferences with an aim to change minds and change the party platform. Have you heard anything here these last few days that's going to shift your position on anything?
Well, what we've had is really constructive engagement and deliberations done in full public view, broadcast live, with 400 delegates, 400 proxies having their say about the range of issues that will then feed into the government's short as well as long-term aspirations. That's the role of the conference here, and it's been really constructive, and it's been good to get that input from working people, from union delegates, from people who are in workplaces, hearing about what's going on right around Australia, about the full range of economic, social, environmental issues.
But is there anything that's changed your mind on anything?
Well, our government does listen to people, but there's broad consensus about the direction in which we're taking the government. We're a government that doesn't sit idle. We don't just occupy the space. And there's recognition of that from delegates. We are a united party, we're cohesive, there is broad agreement about our general direction. We know who we are and what we stand for and the direction in which we want to take the country. And that stands in stark contrast with the chaos on the other side of politics.
There was one debate on the floor of the conference, it may have only been the only one debate, that there should be a conscience vote in the parliament on whether telehealth consultations can be used for voluntary assisted dying. Where do you stand on this?
Well, it's a conscience vote, but I haven't changed my position on that.
What's that?
I'm a supporter of voluntary euthanasia. I think it is important that people have the right to die in dignity, with dignity. But it's also important that protections be placed around it. Now, if someone has a heart attack or an acute health condition, they need a doctor. They can't do that over telehealth. And I think that someone ending their life is just as important. And I think that it should be face-to-face recognition and face-to-face engagement, because otherwise, from my perspective, what that would do as well is undermine voluntary assisted dying.
So you're opposed to using telehealth for voluntary assisted dying?
That's my position. These are very personal decisions, though. So that's why it's a conscience vote. So I respect the fact that there are different views on this.
Yep.
I've been approached, I've had some discussions about it, but I'm yet to be convinced that any move down that track. My concern is that the potential for misuse, but also the potential that it has to undermine the system in itself.
But will you allow the Parliament a conscience vote on this? Will this come forward to the Parliament now?
Well, that's a matter for government to determine.
But the Labor Party has said it should.
But governments determine what governments do around our cabinet table. What the conference does is put a general direction of what they want, and it's clear that it is a matter of conscience, all of those issues. So,
but it's clear that the Labor Party platform now says there should be a vote in the parliament. You can't defy that, can you?
We can make decisions as a government. That's what we do.
Right.
And the Labor Party platform also says that it's a conscience vote.
Yeah. So will you allow it or not?
On these issues. Well, that will be a matter for conscience. I have a position, and I haven't changed that position, but, you know, colleagues...
But will you allow the vote?
Colleagues, what I will allow is for colleagues to express a view about
whether
what processes should occur.
So that's now for the caucus to decide.
Well, it's up to the cabinet to decide, our government, and cabinet makes decisions after and in consultation with the caucus. We're a very orderly government, David.
Okay.
That's one of the things that has put us in good stead over the last 4 years, and as we go forward, my government will continue to be an orderly cabinet-level government that engages not just with the caucus, but importantly as well, engages outside with business, with unions, with civil society on all of these issues.
OK, look, there's been an important debate leading up to and during the conference over artificial intelligence. You gave a major speech on this as well in the lead-up. A few days ago, there was a fascinating moment where an autonomous OpenAI model went rogue during a test. What did you think of that? Are you worried about AI reaching the point where it's making autonomous decisions and doing its own thing and starting to hack data logs?
Of course, and this is one of the reasons why we need to have Australian standards for AI and why we need to shape change. AI is here. It's having an impact on the way that we work, on the way that we function, on the way that the media functions as well. And we need to make sure that humans are in control of it. That was one of...
Can you? I mean, this example seems to suggest humans can't always control.
Well, we need to make sure that that occurs. And that is why there are defence and security related issues here.
And what are they? Because I was keen for your thoughts on the national security implications here.
Well, national security implications are serious. One of the advantages that we have as a country in setting not just national standards for us, but I think in potentially leading the world, is we are a Five Eyes country. And that puts us in a strong position. Now, we know that with defence, we're actually seeing it on the ground or in the sky in the Ukraine-Russia conflict, the role that AI is increasingly playing. You can have better targeted, more efficient, more timely use of defence issues, both offensive and defensive, with artificial intelligence. So all of these issues all need to be debated, and we do need humanity to be at the centre of it. That was the reason why I think the Pope gave his first papal encyclical on these issues, saying that we can't afford as a society for human beings to be left out of this process. We need to be front and centre. We need to be in control of it. And that is something that my speech at Sydney University was about elevating.
Do we also need to make sure Australia's got the best AI? Because Anthropic has put some restrictions on access to its most powerful model, the Mythos model. Will Australia get access to that?
Well, we're in discussions with Anthropic and other companies as well. The speech that I gave was about setting parameters for that. We want to make sure that the Australian standards include issues of energy use, water use, location, but also that they protect our sovereignty rather than undermine it. These are complex issues. One of the reasons why I will take the issues to the National Cabinet next month in August, we'll develop legislation that I'll introduce at the beginning of next year. Hopefully we might do an exposure draft at the end of the year as well. And we've already got the Office of Artificial Intelligence up and running in the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet.
Just coming back to the conference, your former minister, Ed Husic, has been pushing various changes at the conference, including much stronger condemnation of Israel. He didn't get his way. He says he's disappointed. There wasn't debate over this on the floor of the conference and was surprised at the pushback. Were you keen to avoid a debate over whether Israel has committed genocide?
Well, there has been contributions on the floor of the conference, including from Josh Burns and Bassem Abdo, two people who are considered in their approach, two people who recognise that it's in the interests of both Israelis and Palestinians to have peace and security in the Middle East. We want to see a two-state solution. We want to see Israelis and Palestinians living side by side. And we want to see that issue advance. There's been like-minded partners have a similar approach, whether it be the UK, Canada, European allies as well, or indeed countries in our region.
But what do you say to that
push to have a recognition of Israeli genocide in the party platform?
Look, what I say is that the party platform has got the balance right. And what we need to do is to make sure that we as a country, this is a conflict a fair way away from us, but that everything that we do is balanced, that we say that I support the right of Israel to exist within secure borders. I also support the legitimate aspirations of Palestinians for their own state and to live in peace and security with prosperity. Now, we want to see that coming together, and Australia can play a role in promoting harmony rather than conflict, and that is a role that I want our government to continue to play.
What about the role Ed Husic has played at this conference more broadly, not just on this issue? Is he helping or hurting the Labor Party? Look,
Ed, like every other delegate, has a right to come along and to pursue whatever they say is or see as their objective. And that's fine by me.
You've got no problem with what he's been doing?
I have no problem with any delegate to the conference having their say and making their contribution.
But they're being managed so that it's not happening on the floor of the conference, right?
Well, people are entitled to, but what one of the things that's happening is that what's getting to the floor of the conference, it doesn't happen in isolation from, we have a whole process. We have a committee established that includes parliamentarians, includes people from the different state and territory branches.
But all out of the public eye.
They work. David, this is the most transparent political conference in Australia by far. It compares with the closed door meetings of the Liberals or the Nationals. The Greens had a challenge to the leadership without anyone knowing for many months afterwards. We're a transparent party. It's broadcast live.
What about the section of your party? And again, they weren't successful on the conference floor, but this sort of anti-American sentiment, it seems like, almost, wanting to water down commitments to ANZUS, AUKUS, to the US alliance. Are you worried about that strain in your party?
No. If you have 800 delegates and proxies together, you're going to have some different views. It's not a homogenous party. It's a party where people are really passionate about their views of the world. And what though happens at a conference is it comes together and you have an outcome rather than just a process and a mishmash, and then we go forward with the direction of the party.
But not the sort of public arguments you used to take part in, Anthony Albanese.
Well, the party has changed, and one of the things that's happened in the party is we are more cohesive, more united than we've ever been before. And I think that's a good thing.
Back on the United States, Donald Trump's imposed new tariffs on Australia and more than 80 other countries. This time Australia's copped a slightly higher tariff rate than the Europeans, India, Canada, Mexico. Are you going to raise this with President Trump?
Absolutely. These are unjustified. We'll raise it at every level of the Australia-US relationship. We've already done so. These are unjustified. We have very strong provisions on modern slavery. We're strengthening those even further by going through the supply chain issues and making sure that indeed substantial fines and penalties can be paid if those issues aren't dealt with.
Do you really think this is about slavery issues?
Well, it's unjustified. It's unjustified. Tariffs are a penalty on consumers in the country that imposes them. This will lead to higher costs in the United States and undermine the trading relationship that we have with our US friends. And of course, the US has enjoyed a trade surplus with Australia for such a long period of time, something that we will continue to point out.
The US war with Iran also continues, and we're seeing the oil price starting to get back up to, well, around where it was when you intervened with the cut in fuel excise to help motorists. That fuel excise relief completely comes to an end on Friday. Should motorists, do they deserve a bit more help though if the oil price is climbing again?
Look, we of course deal with a range of cost of living measures. That was one. But as well, people got a tax cut this month. The minimum wage was increased this month as well. So we deal with a range of issues as they arise.
Any more fuel excise
relief?
But
importantly, well, that's not in our planning at this point in time. We say we keep, obviously. We live in really turbulent times, but what our government has managed to do, and some said it was impossible, some said that there would need to be fuel rationing around Easter. Our figures released just today shows indeed that fuel usage was cut around that time. I did my national address. We ran the campaign of every little bit helps to encourage people to take just what they need, not extra.
And usage has come down.
Usage has come down and is indeed lower than it was a year ago as well. That's a good thing. But importantly as well, we have kept supply going. There is now more fuel in Australia today than there was on February 28.
What's that cost Australia in the budget?
Well it's there's substantial cost. Some of it will come back, but we allocated, as part of our fuel security plan, was in excess of $10 billion. But that was about better fuel security going forward, including a government-owned reserve. It's about, we'll have some more announcements about fuel in the coming days and weeks as well, but we also
fuel supply or storage or
well, you'll have to wait for the announcement, but we'll continue to examine things that were in that process in the budget. But importantly as well, our relationships have produced a dividend for Australia.
Nonetheless, this ongoing war in Iran does have that impact on the oil price.
Of course, it does, and we have said. We have said consistently we want to see a de-escalation, we want to see an end of the conflict, we want to see the Strait of Hormuz opened without fees going through, because that would undermine international trade.
Whether it's the war, whether it's the tariffs, is Donald Trump hurting the Australian economy?
Oh, look, we deal with President Trump constructively. I'll continue to do that. Obviously,
Is he hurting our economy?
Well, the war is having an impact here in Australia, and the longer it goes, the bigger the conflict, the impact will be. This is a war on the other side of the world. We are not protagonists in it, but we are impacted by it. And we've consistently called for a de-escalation, and we'll continue to do so.
You must get frustrated, though, that Donald Trump's continuing to inflict these sorts of things on our economy.
My job is to deal with things as they are.
Okay.
And dealing things as they are means treating our allies with respect, engaging constructively with them, including with President Trump, and I'll continue to do so.
I want to ask you, PM, about the reports in the Nine newspapers over recent days about a private fundraising dinner. Firstly, did you attend a dinner at the home of Felix Lee in Point Piper?
Oh, look, I attend lots of functions.
What about this one?
I attend lots of functions in lots of places, including last night right here.
What about this dinner in Point Piper?
I attend lots of functions in
lots of
places.
Why don't you want to
answer
that?
Well, I do. You've just said that that occurred. You know, that's fine. I attend lots of dinners in lots of places, and I don't talk about private dinners. I've held a number this week here in Adelaide as well.
Lots of fundraising. This one, the concern is that his father is accused by the tax office of deceiving authorities about funneling huge sums of money from China to Australia. Is that a concern for you?
Well, I'm not aware of those issues.
Should you have been aware?
He wasn't there. He wasn't there. I attended a dinner last night with 750 people.
I'm not asking about that.
But they're the facts, David. I attend a lot of meetings, functions with lots of people, and talking about people's relatives, even removed from that.
Well, it's where the money's coming from, PM. Is this going to be looked into, whether there's a red flag here?
Well, we declare all of our donations in accordance with the rules. We're transparent about it. I do attend a lot of events, and, you know, that is part of the process that occurs engaging with people.
Look, Prime Minister, we're near the midway point of this parliamentary term. You've just wrapped up the Labor Party National Conference. You are in a dominant position in your party. Will you be back in 3 years at the next Labor conference?
I hope to be so, but that depends upon the Australian people. We certainly don't take anything for granted. And before the last election, there was a lot of speculation that we wouldn't be as successful as we were. My job is to be focused on the needs of the Australian people. The conference, I think, has assisted that. You know, we choose progress rather than just protest. We choose outcomes rather than outrage. And we choose to deliver real change. And that is what this conference has assisted in. That's what my government is focused on each and every day. And if we do that, then we will go to the Australian people and ask for their further support.
Finally, PM, on a lighter note, have you ever yelled at your dog, Toto?
I certainly have not. And I think Toto's pretty spoilt, frankly. And no, she's... you've met Toto.
I have.
How could anyone
lovely
yell
dog.
At Toto?
Lovely dog. Prime Minister, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, coming up, Barnaby Joyce and his dog, Stella, how a second of live television hijacked the news cycle for the week. First, let's bring our panel back in, ABC Radio's Raph Epstein, Ashley Raper from Network 10 and The Australian's Greg Brown. Just a couple of things from that interview. I want to go back to the voluntary assisted dying issue. It was a moment of actual debate on the floor of the conference. Raph, the Prime Minister supports voluntary assisted dying, not telehealth consultations for it, though. Is it clear, though, whether this will even come up for a vote in Parliament?
I don't know what he was saying there. I think he's saying there he will decide if it comes to the Parliament.
Which is interesting, right? It's saying to the Labor Party that have just made this decision, we'll decide.
I've taken calls from people whose loved ones have died in circumstances that they did not want to die in that way. And it's because they live in regional parts of Victoria and they can't get access to doctors. Like, it is a big issue. We've had VAD in Victoria for a while now. It comes up again and again. I think it is one of those issues, maybe like some of the other stuff at conference, like around the gas tax. It has a lot of salience, it has a lot of weight with a lot of people and cuts across party lines, so it'd be interesting to see if he decides to pick that up.
I don't get the vibe, though, the PM's keen on pushing this one.
No, I got the that there's no appetite at all right. to pursue this. And it goes back to that unity. As being a state political reporter on Macquarie Street when they did the decriminalising abortion and doing the voluntary assisted dying, nothing breeds disunity like a conscience vote. And it seems that if this did go to Parliament for a vote, it would have to be a conscience vote.
Absolutely.
And that becomes really chaotic because it invites people to say what they think, and a lot of people do feel passionate about it. And it also will filter down because this is a state issue. The states are in control of the voluntary
system. We should just explain that. It is a state and territory matter, but it's the use of carriage services.
So
it's a Commonwealth matter.
Yeah, so it's restricted. The federal law has to change for telehealth to be used. So it's a two things. So if there'll be an overturning, if it happens federally, it would have to happen federally, but then the states administer it.
But so maybe it goes back to the conference and the division. Wayne Swan's phrase is, we can't be antiseptic centrists. Wayne Swan was saying that is no longer enough. So the PM, when he's talking to you, is saying, look, we've given people a tax cut in July. How many people have noticed? You're right, having a conscience vote on that issue obviously is tough for governments. Maybe they are the things, though, that the government needs to think about. They're OK compared to the coalition in relation to parties like One Nation at the moment, but maybe they need to do those big things. The biggest cheer the PM got at the conference, think this is right, is when he mentioned the housing changes, you know, negative gearing and capital gains. They resisted doing that for a long time. Like, there is a lot of desire in the party, and I think more broadly, they want governments.
Maybe some brave souls in caucus could raise it and have a debate in caucus about it and bring on the issue, but they're discouraged to raise it.
Well, speaking about making big, bold, brave tax changes, the gas tax, a lot of talk leading up to the conference. It was a fizzer, though, in the end. Another one that Ed Husic was agitating for. What happened there, Greg? And I guess where does it go now within Labor?
Well, I don't really think this was ever on. I mean, there was a phrase in... There was some change... language that appeared in the second draft that's now in the platform, which was that Labor supports a fairer return for resources, including through the taxation system.
Doesn't mention gas?
It doesn't mention gas, no. So that's been... So it's one of those vague references tell anyone, oh, look, I've given you something here, and then you go to business, oh, no gas tax, but various people feel they've had a win. But that actual reference, the PM's made clear... That does not necessarily mean a gas tax. However, there is support within the party for it. Jim Chalmers has never ruled it out since the budget. And I think key to it is if they want to do something really meaningful on income taxes, which is crucial for the intergenerational element, they will need more revenue.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, the only thing that really seemed to trouble the Prime Minister at the conference was something beyond even his control, and that was the jammed escalator.
We are proudly a progressive movement. Two words that can't be applied to the escalator in this building, must be said. Now, when it did come to a standstill, I'll admit there was a moment, just a moment, when the ladder of opportunity finally made sense. Thank you, Mark Latham. After 20 years, we can finally laugh about making him leader.
We can finally laugh.
I think he would have liked to put Ed Husic on that escalator.
Well, also, the Prime Minister's laughing about that now. The day after, when it went to news that night, he wasn't laughing about it. Right. It was an evolution that he took a while for the Prime Minister to find the escalator funny.
Yeah, once he got through National Conference unfazed, then it became funny, yeah. You know?
Look, the backdrop to the conference was obviously the shift in the political landscape we've seen over the last 6 months or so when it comes to the rise of One Nation. And this really was a dominant theme on that first day. The Prime Minister and the other speakers on that first day all talking about One Nation, how to take them on, not to be complacent and so on. How worried is Labor about One Nation?
Well, it was fascinating that really they elevated One Nation now as their biggest political competitor. I mean, that was something that came out in the first instance in a release of Wayne Swan's piece. And then Peter Malinauskas went on that same sort of theme as well. Albanese was more talking about the three right-wing parties together, but certainly One Nation loomed large. I think what was fascinating is that they're talking about One Nation not as if it's some new phenomenon or a new thing. They're talking about One Nation as this is just another version of the Liberal Party. So Wayne Swan was calling Joe Bjelke-Petersen, for example, the original Pauline Hanson. He was talking about how Labor have taken on Howard. They've, you know, beaten Fraser. Now this is our new challenge.
And corporate interests are getting behind One Nation now to pursue what they want.
And Malinauskas made that point that there have been right-wing parties in the past. Our main competitors have come and gone in the past. There was obviously, you know, United Australia Party before the Liberal Party, and sort of now One Nation is a continuum, and we've got to keep up the fight on cost of living, I think, rather than treat them as a different entity.
Well, also, they don't want to go angry, do they? Like Malinauskas' line is, you can't be morally superior. And I think he actually said on afternoon briefing, Malinauskas, that he doesn't see One Nation voters as racist at all. They really only want to tackle One Nation on workers' stuff, on, you know, parental leave, on those sort of traditional battlegrounds. It was interesting too, Malinauskas said, I think, on the Guardian podcast, you don't motivate anyone by making them angry. Clearly One Nation motivates people by making them angry. So they really want to stay in that straight lane. They don't want to talk down to the One Nation voter.
And I do think they really sharpened their message and really used conference. It was almost like a campaign launch, like even the slogan, delivering real change, which we saw rolled out there. That was purely for One Nation, you know, that Labor delivers real change, where Labor's trying to position that, you know, One Nation just talks about, you know, doesn't provide solutions. They just get angry without providing solutions. So I thought that was quite noticeable at the conference, and the lines that were coming out with the Prime Minister were much sharper. And as you're saying, Greg, like linking One Nation with the coalition together and trying to make that quite clear to people watching.
But it was clear that the bigger threat for Labor, at least as they're seeing it right now, is One Nation rather than the coalition.
There's a bit of a split on that, though. Like, there is a view within some that it's One Nation, but there is a strong view among others that the coalition will revive and, you know, maybe under a new leader, or maybe Angus Taylor will improve. So
yeah, they don't want to dismiss it.
There are divisions about what their main competitors are.
I mean, I wasn't there, but I was told every event, every fringe event, like every time they got together at any forum, either drinking beers, a sort of, you know, comedy panel at a fringe event, it was all focused on One Nation.
Well, what's any political conversation this year been about, Raph?
Politics changes.
No, exactly. Well, Pauline Hanson herself was dominating headlines once again at the start of the week, this time with comments about domestic violence.
Well, it is wrong, but it's also a two-way street. But I'm not saying that it's just men and women can lose their cool as well. Domestic violence is a scourge.
This two-way street comment, obviously there was a lot of backlash over this. Ash, is this Pauline Hanson saying that women are sometimes the perpetrators of violence, or is it saying that women are sometimes to blame for being the victim, or is this an example of a bit of confusion because of the way she talks?
Well, yes, it wasn't very articulate what she was saying, and I think there was confusion over the two-way street headline. When you listen to the whole thing, what she was saying was that... was that she said that men, yes, are violent against women, but women are also violent against men. So she, it wasn't that it's a two-way street that women, you know, deserve it. She wasn't saying that. She was saying that men are violent, women are violent to men as well, which is a remarkable thing to say. And if you go with the metaphor of the two-way street, when we know, like... there is a highway.
Yeah, four lanes going that way.
Yes, and one a trickle the other way. So, and how she expressed this as well, it was a pretty easy question because she was asked, this radio host wanted her to have a go at men. She's like, what is your message to men who are violent against women? And she said, it's wrong, and then went there. Like, it is quite extraordinary that that's how she responded to that question when she didn't need to do it at all. All she needed to say was, it's absolutely wrong, it's abhorrent, it should not be happening. And then also she went further and talking about women who are in violent situations should leave, which is such a simplistic thing to say. And for somebody who's talking about being Prime Minister and talking about policy, that was just a ridiculous thing to say.
Just two things on that. Firstly, Anglicare reckon it costs about $7,000 for the average woman to try to leave, so that's a significant barrier. But she does have a track record on this stuff. Mm. She's called women liars in the past. She's used parliamentary privilege to have a go at a relative of hers, basically accusing them of perjury over this because her son was accused. So she has a track record. I think what is interesting, to go back to sort of the ALP approach to this, she speaks to that really angry, really disaffected, really abusers of the facts representing men. That's a part of her constituency. I think that's another thing that Labor doesn't want to encourage and talk about. They won't. They're not so willing to take her on about that stuff. Tanya Plibersek might.
They're not.
But they want to steer clear of that, just like they want to steer clear of
that. Yeah, as you said, keep it back to the workers' stuff.
Even the Islamophobia stuff. Like, I think that, you know, every time Pauline Hanson says something that is, you know, quite frankly outrageous, it's important that voters know that this is who you're getting if you're flirting with One Nation. But I think fundamentally the way that people who are Labor people considering going to One Nation, the way Labor sees that they can stop those people going to One Nation is through the economy.
Yeah.
And with the coalition, the way they feel they can win back people is by portraying Pauline Hanson is someone who can't run an economy. She's a risk to your wealth. She's a risk to our prosperity. I think that's actually, while these, like when she said, I think it came out a couple of weeks ago, that Islam is based on terrorism, Labor didn't say too much about that.
It's interesting, Greg, you know, your point there that it needs to be brought to the nation's attention. We would all know there's a lot of debate about the media and what we seize upon every time she does say something outrageous or controversial. Raf, I think we've probably spoken about this as well. Is the media getting it right in the treatment of these things?
I think One Nation especially gets a soft run on the morning TV shows. Barnaby Joyce gets a bit of a soft run. Has to be said, Pauline Hanson doesn't put herself up for interview very often. We all know when we pay more attention to her, our audience pays more attention to us. But she uses that. Like, we are in a symbiotic relationship with her. I think the start of the week was the White Australia stuff, when she said the problems started when we dropped White Australia. I think the coverage of that was pretty good by what I'll call the legacy media. She made that into content. She did a video saying, I'm not advocating White Australia, but she used that on one of her Instagram videos as a chance to repeat some of her really fact-distorting stuff. So it is difficult. She should just be held to the same standard every other politician is. If she says things that are outrageous, it should be reported as outrageous. The media don't need to target her. They just need to hold her to the same standard. But she often uses our fact-checking. Like, if you fact-check Trump, you rebroadcast his message. And we're in the same situation with Pauline Hanson.
Yeah, I think the shift needs to come from, like, OK, her being at the height she is new and shiny. And I think over time, The coverage is shifting towards, OK, what will this actually look like as a government, though? Probing into exactly how expensive all their policies are, and somehow she's got two ways to pay for everything, which is eliminating the, you know, Indigenous Affairs Agency and eliminating the climate. That's just paying for everything. It's like,
I don't know,
it's
if that makes any difference to her support. I mean, these parties are hard to tackle. Right? In Germany, there's a firewall around AfD. Which is the rough equivalent, hasn't stopped them soaring in the polls. Like, it's difficult to know. You're right, the coverage should be there, but it's hard to know if it makes a difference to her support.
Look, I want to move on. Just Sarah Hanson-Young, the Green senator, has messaged through that on the voluntary assisted dying issue we were talking about, she will be moving a private senator's bill in August, so coming up when Parliament resumes in a few weeks. So there will be a vote, she is arguing, before the end of the year on this. So trying to force the issue on telehealth for voluntary assistance.
This government, they don't seem to me to be fans of letting other politicians lead them in any particular direction.
Let's see how far that goes.
We'll see how far that goes in the Senate. Anyway, speaking of One Nation, there was no way of ignoring, no matter where you were, Barnaby Joyce and his pooch, Stella, after a split-second moment on 7:30, went viral.
Are you really comfortable with where she is taking you?
I think... Sit down! Sorry. It's a dog.
I laughed. It's funny. That's Barnaby.
Sit down!
An Australian politician named Barnaby Joyce.
That was right-wing Australian politician Barnaby Joyce.
Barnaby what? Joyce fährt aus der Haut.
Sit down! Australiano Barnaby Joyce.
Sit down!
You've all seen the interview of Barnaby yelling at his dog.
Have you ever yelled at a dog during a live interview?
No, I can't say I have.
Barnaby's clearly frustrated that he's become essentially the cleaner. And he's cleaning up from Pauline Hanson.
I yelled at Alfie like that, he'd cry for a week.
Everyone in country Australia is looking at that grab of Barnaby and the dog, laughing at the ABC, laughing at the outrage machine.
The agenda, the biased mainstream media.
And it was under the floor, under the deck, and it was just barking incessantly.
Not sort of like Quali Woof Woof, it was like continual, like...
I have to apologise for this dog, which has decided to bail up.
Don't worry about the dog, just answer the question.
I'm up against the lefties on the ABC. I can't hear myself think, and it's farm dog.
If you can't govern your dog, you can't govern the country.
Oh, Stella, you're famous, darling, aren't you? Yes.
Sit down politely.
The dog was no problem, thank you.
What's to me?
Stella does look like a lovely dog as well. Look, there's a couple of things here. What did this moment tell us? What did it reveal about, I guess, not just Barnaby Joyce, but our polity and the way this just divided us between left and right, city and country, Raph?
It tells you, what's that old line, never act on screen with dogs or children? Certainly tells you. Look, there's part of it that is just viral. I found it amazing on the morning when we were talking about it on the radio. It's like it's a Rorschach test. Everybody sees what they want to see. I don't know if it actually tells you anything. I do think there's something in what Aaron Violi's saying. The toughest thing for Barnaby is he has to constantly try and clean up after Pauline Hanson. I didn't interview a dog specialist myself. I haven't. No, I did not. Maybe I should have. There was a lack.
Right.
If you are shouting at a dog like that, I think you're already losing. It is the case that many people may shout at their dog in that way. It is not effective and is not to be recommended.
Oh, yes. You have to laugh at it. But it took on this life of its own. Was there really a dog? Then there was
That was a whole thing.
And was he doing it to change the story? Like, it became this whole thing.
It did allow him... on an NRL panel. That's how much...
And look, I'll quote my 12-year-old son, sometimes when I question him, he's like, not that deep, bro. Bro being mum. I don't think it was that deep. No. I just think that
he'd allow him to dodge some of the questions. Yeah, like they were important. Sarah was asking important questions.
Yeah, and about character. But, yes, I think, though, that it does work very much in One Nation's interest because, you know, when this elite debate's going with their cavoodles getting upset about him yelling at a dog, it just plays right into One Nation's hands.
Mm. The inner-city latte sippers don't know what it's like to deal with a dog in the country.
So I didn't know. So it's a cavoodle-kelpie
divide. No, it's not. I'm saying the elites with their cavoodles in the city as opposed to this was... I think it was a rescue dog, so they're not quite sure what it is. I think it's a staffy, maybe.
But I do think he's getting frustrated.
Yeah, that's what I was going to come to, right? Yes. What does it tell us?
I was going to guess that.
And he took it out on the dog.
We've got to cavoodles and... anyway. Yeah. Yes, but is Barnaby Joyce now the clean-up guy, as we saw Aaron Violi saying there, and is this what he signed up for?
Well, the first element of frustration he had, if you remember the Pauline Hanson good Muslim sort of comment, and I remember I gave him a call and put it to him, and he went ballistic at me. We put on page one that he said, you've got to ask Pauline Hanson, don't ask me about this. But that was sort of the beginning, a sort of sign to come. And I think he is getting frustrated that he is having to clean up some of Pauline Hanson's statements, particularly on Islam and the Tommy Robinson issue as well. And I also think he's getting frustrated that everyone are asking so many questions now about how much their policies are going to cost, because he, remember, he's their Treasury spokesman and they don't have many staff. And given how high they are in the polls, we're all saying, OK, well, if we're going to go to the Coalition for a comment, maybe we need to go to One Nation for a comment as well. So I think all of that together is coming down on him pretty heavily.
Yeah. He's not about to throw the toys out of the cot and leave, though. I don't get the sense.
No, not quite yet. No.
You'd think he'd rather be talking about other things than the latest Pauline Hanson outrage about white Australia or whatever it is that we're seeing. Look, a question on Victorian politics for you, Raf. Is this the week that Jacinta Allan survives as Premier or gets the chop from Labor?
Certainly her ministers are getting cranky. Just some of the things they've said to me over the weekend. They are talking, some of her ministers and some of her caucus, about a leadership change. They say people are demanding action. A few of the ministers have said to me that we are closer than we've ever been. However, a lot of qualifiers. I don't yet see an organised attempt to dislodge the Premier. It could be, it would be complicated and messy unless it was a simple transfer from Jacinta Allan to one other person. I don't see that happening. There is a caucus meeting on Tuesday for the Victorian Labor Party. We are 3 months from caretaker and 4 months from an election. It's worth thinking about where the polls are. Firstly, I don't think I've ever seen... Don Chipp's Democrats were never in the 20s. This is the first time another party has come along and stolen some real polling territory. If you average the polls in Victoria, the Coalition are at just over 27%, the ALP are at just under 25%, and One Nation are just under 23%. So they are neck and neck. Yeah. No one knows how that plays out.
But this big question for Labor.
Yes.
And they've been here before federally and in most of the states. Is a change going to help, or does it just create more grief that lasts for a long time?
Some of her caucus and her ministers and important people have said to me it's no longer about the cost of change. It's about the cost of whether or not we drive the government over a cliff.
Interesting.
So that's how they talk about it. I don't see any actual solid action, but they're certainly hitting the phones.
We'll be watching this. Yeah.
And no one knows how it all plays out.
Because the clock is running down on that looming election. All right, time for some final observations. Greg.
Well, I think just in relation to a talk about a potential leadership change, I do reflect sometimes on Kevin Rudd's decision and the decision of the government at the time to change the rules about how you change leader, which is giving 50% representation to party members and then 50% to caucus, all about reducing the power of the factions, increasing democracy in the party. We've seen one vote during that time for the party membership. Very few people within the parliamentary party talk about future ballots. They talk about agreements between faction leaders so they don't have a ballot. And it leaves you very inflexible in the situation just ahead of an election as well. So,
interesting.
I think in all that was unwise.
Yeah. Ash?
Just picking up on the Prime Minister's, what he said to you about AI and a draft legislation, exposure draft coming by the end of the year. The Prime Minister is going to the United Nations in September for Leaders Week. He went last year. You and I were there last year. And he did his social media ban and that push and trying to get international consensus around that. And we have seen other countries move. I think he plans to do the same with AI and taking on tech companies and getting that consensus internationally. He wants to lead on this like he led on social media. And also it just wraps into as well, Australia wants to get on Security Council, that bid, and it'll wrap into trying to be a leader on that front for
right.
that bid.
Raf?
Just back to conference. You know, the PM's right. It is the most transparent conference. And all of the good people I spoke to at conference who told me they genuinely believe they had great debates behind closed doors. I'm going to leave the final word, though, to Julia Gillard. She wrote this in her book. She wrote about National Conference this way. When conference is good, it is a place to hothouse ideas and set new directions. When it is bad, it is a place for screaming matches. When it is at its worst, it is a lifeless beast of no debate, no ideas, and with everything controversial swept under the carpet. That's Julia Gillard.
Yeah. Thank you all very much for joining us this morning. Thanks for your company as well. Finally, when you're looking at the political landscape from Angus Taylor's perspective, nothing looks easy. So there's no point crying over spilt milk. We'll leave you with that. Thanks for watching.
So you just pour your own bottle of milk?
It should come up with a file here that you can press the hole once you've got the bottle under.
No.
Oh!
I don't have to make some of that.
Making myself feel very excited about being here.